Hello, this is the Torg Eternity Delphi Council Debriefings, where the storm has a name. We are your hosts, Lehman, Jay, and Mark, and today we will be wrapping up the mega adventure Fires of Ra. But before we get into Act 7, I did want to bring up a comment that was on our last Fires of Ra Act 6 on YouTube. So the comment was by Lynn Green 7978, who I've noticed posts a lot of does a lot of comments, which is great. But this kind of coincides with a theme that we've been saying throughout the entire mega adventure, is while we're not encouraging anybody to just cut acts, we understand that people have schedules and sometimes things flow better. And when we notice if there is an act that could be cut, we have kind of pointed those out. And we've also pointed out where you might be able to insert acts if you want to actually make it even more beefy. But this one says, we had a player schedule changing and they only had a few weeks left to finish. And one of the players was the aerospace engineer from a day one adventure. And there was that completely unrelated act where the player secure Eternium for the Delphi Council that doesn't come up again in the adventure. So we skipped this act and let the engineer weird scientist build the thing from the plans. So I wasn't sure if they meant the securing Eternium was sort of the Amazon act, I thought.
Right.
I think so.
But that's kind of two acts.
Right. So it might
it sounded
I'm not
more
sure
like
if it was
Bubeki
one, if it was
factory.
Act 4, Isle of the Warrior Women, or if it was Act 6, which was the source of the Nile, or if it was both. But yes, that's just something that you can do. So I would rather somebody cut an act and get have a fun session without specific acts than to look at, you know, Fires of Ra or any other mega adventures and just look at it going, oh, that's way too much. So some of them, as a game master, you might be able to look through, decide what your group would be able to do. And especially if somebody starts and then they're like, hey, I can't do this. If everybody's on board to finish the adventure and remove an act, I think that's fine. Again, your mileage is going to vary depending on what type of group you have. Is this a home group with friends? Is this an online group with strangers that, you know, you've made a commitment to do the whole thing and then they'll feel shortchanged if they don't, you know, get all seven acts? But we just wanted to, again, stress that you don't have to stress from the number of acts and scenes do with the material that we publish what you will to make it the best for your game. And you have it straight from my mouth. It is official. Because every Cosmverse is part of the Infiniverse. And that is an official statement in the very core rules of the game. So having said that, let's go ahead and get into Act 7, which is Skies of Fire. So if you remember Act 6, the Storm Knights were able to, in whatever way, if it was sneaking in and infiltrating this island base, or if they just went in gun blazing, they were able to get Evening Falcon. They were able to get the Evening Falcon, and they have gotten plans for the manned jet. And this is the use the Falcon to get into the manned jet and take it out of the skies. So, scene one is a dogfight, and it is called Dogfight. So, Jay, what are your thoughts on scene one?
So you do get a little bit of a lore, not lore, but schematic dump, I guess, at the beginning of the act when... Sure. And some other things happen at the beginning, too, which the players may not even necessarily know themselves. But like one of the big things is you have to get Mobius out of there. Because you don't, the players, even though they're plucky, probably beta Storm Knights, they don't really stand that much of a chance against Mobius and his darkness device and everything. So Dr. Frest has organized or orchestrated himself getting captured by Jesse Caramel or some other traitor or something happens to get him captured, and that will distract Mobius and have him be messing around with Frest with the Omegatron. Something, again, and if you haven't had Frest show up or endear him to the players, they'll be like, whatever. So you kind of want to make this seem like a big deal. But the interesting thing is the analysis of all the plans and everything have found that the manned jet is not just a big old supercarrier. It's actually also... basically a mobile talisman / Stella, and the whole scheme is that it can like normally a Stella has to be prepared ahead of time. It requires it being set up, and there's all this pomp and circumstance to get it going, but the man jet could just drop it and immediately create a new zone, and that's horrible, and you have to get in there and stop it. Luckily, with the plans, we are able to get through the shield of Aten. So, as Lehman said, the first thing that happens is a big old dogfight. And my memory of this was that it was very simple. But that's partially because my group got the Ive Sebek at the beginning. Mm-hmm. So the super death laser, the was it Ive Helios or... I can't remember what it's actually called. You know, the super laser was not...
back, I think.
Yeah, it was not as dangerous. Like, it didn't do as much damage as it normally would. So I believe the way it's kind of scripted, there's some plucky A-29s that are on your side at the beginning, which don't really stand much of a chance against the Nile forces. Then some Israeli F-15s come in, and it, for me, what I recall is those F-15s were just... bopped up the Nile forces like it wasn't even fair, and the super laser was able to damage the F-15s, but not as immediately as it's kind of presented in the adventure because it was a weakened version of the laser. Either way, my group managed to get in. I don't remember exactly how, probably just taxing in. There is some talk about how some things can happen, like maybe you can get knocked off the edge or like depending on how the Evening Falcon docks. But my memory is they got in without too much of a problem.
So, Mark, what are your thoughts on scene one dogfight?
So we talked a little bit about this at the end of scene what was it, the last scene, scene five in the factory when they take off and they're getting away, right? And we had mixed input on, I did it as you know, packets fighting as they take off and a dogfight, and Jay was like, well, yeah, but we got a bigger, better one coming up, and he didn't like duplicating, which is cool. I like the idea of you've got this toy, you've used it and you like it, let's use it again. And so I did them both as a great big dogfight, and you're flying around and doing all this stuff with these great big, you know, our group. I think every group that I had that I ran this for got the Eye of Sebek, so the death ray wasn't nearly as dangerous as it could have been had you not gotten that. And the dogfight to me was just, it's a lot of, I find it to be a lot of fun because there's a lot of stuff going on. And it's almost like obstacle piling in the Nile Empire, because you've got the Paquettes, you got the A-29, you got the Niketa bomber, you got the weapons coming from the manned jet, you got the missiles coming, then the Israelis show up, which is cool, and all the while somebody's flying the Evening Falcon trying to get to the manned jet and land, and I think the way that I interpreted that was kind of rather than docking or landing in a bay like a fighter that belongs there would do, it was more of an attack or an assault, where the Evening Falcon has grapple instead of landing gear. It's got these claw grapples, and it hits the man jet and latches on, and you have to hop out. And now you're running around on the outside of the man jet with the wind is rushing, you know, because it's not screaming along like a jetliner. It's moving at a stately pace. It's more of, you know, it's Nile Empire, so you kind of got this cross between the helicarrier from Avengers, Nick Fury's running around in, and a blimp from old school noir detective steampunk kind of thing, and it's just kind of moving. So, you know, for me, it's very Nile, this whole how do we get on the man jet, because you've got all of these things that are trying to stop you as you trying to run through the gauntlet to get to the man jet, and you eventually, of course, they get to the man jet, or the adventure's over because you died. And then they hop out and they're running around on the outside of the man jet with the wind screaming by them, and they have to get inside, which moves us into scene two. So I enjoy this scene. I think it's a great start to this act. When I do it on Roll 20, I have an image of the manned jet, which I got. I think I got it out of the PDF, and throw it up there with a cloud background, just so you know all of the different things are running around, and it gives the players their first view of this thing that we've been talking about for six acts. that you know, you've got blueprints, but you don't really see the I showed them the blueprint picture, but they don't really know what it is, and then here you have this. Serpent neck kind of Nile Empire big dish gonna shoot you down kind of thing there, that's like, okay, the man jet, here we go. And it becomes, to me, this is when the mission becomes real in the player's minds, because you can see the man jet at this point,
right? I enjoyed this scene, but I will say, learn from me, my mistakes. Be very clear on your communication on the different forces at play, because I was doing this at a real table where my players were lined up, and as you know, I like lots of people, so we had about eight players, and I guess either the front half of the table, like I was the game master at the head of the table, so the players on both sides but closer to me understood all the different players, and that some were allies and some were enemies, but the people that were on the far side of the table, you know, and the players were talking amongst themselves, they had it in their mind that everybody was an enemy in other planes.
Uh-oh.
And one of them was one that was shooting. So with the evening, you know, firing back with the Evening Falcon, and they were shooting there, you know, it came up, I'm going to shoot the A-29.
Yeah.
And everybody like looked at her like, Are you trying to like pretend that we're the bad guys to get us on board by killing the good guys? And like everybody just kind of stopped, because there were, like I said, half of the people understood, and the other half had a completely different idea of what was going on. And for a moment, we really thought, oh, this person is doing this to kind of like, because the man jet, they're like, you know, you're. State your code or whatever type thing.
It's an old code.
Are they trying out. You know, are you trying to pretend that you're a bad guy by shooting down the good guy? Until
Like casual.
We kind of stopped, you know, I stopped the game, kind of re-explained everything, kind of, you know, used markers and little calculators and phones and stuff. They're like, here's where they are, here's where, you know, this is this. Until everybody understood, and it was like, oh no, I wasn't trying to shoot our allies. I was actually wanting to shoot our enemy. So it's just one of those things. Clear communication is always key on it. My group also, since the previous group, he did the first two acts. One of the characters had martyred herself to keep the Eye of Sebekht. It also didn't have the big, the huge, crazy damage death ray. So, as in, the big crazy death ray is 32 damage AP 10, which is ridiculously powerful.
And you can hunt Boraka
not having
with
it
that.
only has it as a damage 26 AP 5, which is still
much
pretty,
easier to
still pretty potent. They were happy when the F-15s came and all of that. It was just make sure everybody understands the scene. Always good game mastering advice. So the players have gotten onto the man jet. As Mark said, however you dock, you dock. I think I might have had the claws type thing also, that it had claws to grab onto. But then we get into scene two, all aboard. So what are your thoughts, Jay, on all aboard?
This is one time where my players actually had the same opinion as me. Because I thought, when I read this book, right, like, one of the coolest things I thought, like, setting-wise, was these robo-gospog. Mm-hmm. How Mobius is just I don't trust these things, so let's just take their heads off and replace them with drones, and we'll remote control them all over the place. And I was like, that's brilliant, I love it, and my players also loved it. As soon as they saw these things, they were freaked out by them, because I was, talking about how the antennas are, twitching around and everything. I have literally no memory of them actually doing the DSR to destroy the Robolisk, which controls them all. They must have, but I don't remember it at all. I think they were desperately, it's possible that they went up to the bridge and just desperately avoided all the Robo-Gospog. But unfortunately, yeah, I cannot remember what actually happened in this scene.
Mark, your thoughts on the all aboard scene two?
My tabletop for the all aboard when they were out, I used a number of tabletops in this scene. And my tabletop for the all aboard outside was the mock-up of the starship of Elon Musk's ex starship. That's the outside of the man jet. Inside, I'm with Jay. I love the Robo-Gospog. These things were just creepy, just because there's a guy in that helmet or gal. Don't know. Can't tell. Little antennas going. And they were everywhere, and I didn't give them the opportunity to unavoid them. They had to deal with some of them, and getting to the Robolisk, that was a whole nother. That to me was this whole act has some really nice stuff in it, and I believe Mobius shows up at this point and freaks everybody out when they start taking on the Robolisk. But I liked the fact that for a change, they get just obstacle piled to death here with Robo-Gospog of the first planning, Robo-Gospog of the fourth planning, and then Mobius shows up, and the Robolisk itself has some of its own problems to deal with, and you got the four steps on this whole thing, and there's just so much going on that it's your table needs to have bite. This is Act 7, so they should know how to work together by now. If they haven't figured out how to work together by now, they're going to get killed in this room. and they did. Everybody did really well putting it together. But this fight here is a legitimate threat. Mobius shows up, and you got problems.
Yeah,
I had Mobius. I can't remember if that was part of the book or not. I had Mobius.
He shows up on round six.
Right, if it's still going on. So yeah, my group, when I had him, the second planning Gospog, the Robo-Gospog, They were kind of running from them. They got to the Robolisk, and then the second planting Gosphog, I had them like come through one door, and then the fourth planting Gosphog go through another one, and then the Robolisk being in the middle,
yep.
Which controls basically it's the central control for the manned jet. Was the DSR to get rid of that. So the Cyber Templar, he jumped in front of the fourth planting, Robo-Gosphog of the fourth planting, and was like, just get it done. I'm going to take all the hits. And then a couple of the other ones went against the second planting while the rest of the group did the DSR, which is one thing that I highly recommend. DSRs always involve everybody, not just the person or two doing the DSR. It's always, to me, it's always more interesting and gets everybody involved if you have some other thing, exciting action happening when a DSR is going down. I think my players were able to get through it before Dr. Mobius came himself, but I believe they kind of heard something that, you know, like a computer system or something acknowledging his presence to kind of pick up the... You give a not a definite time limit, but you make time a necessity.
Shortly.
We need to do this. Actually, to kind of go back real quick to the beginning when Jay was talking about it's kind of dropping these talisman stele things. The Nile Empire does have the reality bombs, but these type of things would last a lot longer, as like stele would. So it's even like a step above the whole reality bomb, and why them dropping it is very, very bad. It kind of gives another reason, because if it's, I think I might have even had it drop one while they were moving, you know, so it was oh no, we really got to get this before it drops multiple ones, and giving that sense of urgency can help a lot. So then we get to scene three, the bridge. So what are your thoughts on scene three, Jay?
I should also mention, I forgot to mention at the beginning, that part of this was that Lady Hourglass came with the group as a way to prove her loyalty to the Delphi Council after she had, you know, traitored onto the side of good. So she was also with the party too. And I think that might even be why, like, she was able to help them navigate it or something. I don't remember the specifics. Mm-hmm. But here is where you get to the bridge and you find, and I quote, every surviving villain from the Retribution League. Right. So this is also a fight. And Hooded Cobra. I think the only one I didn't have here was Mirage for some reason. Like, I was saving her for something else.
Oh, I did.
Well, everyone else was here. And it was a brutal fight. This is where the players are trying to basically get control of the man jet away from Hooded Cobra. But because Mobius didn't appear already for mine, there is this whole thing here where Hooded Cobra is trying to set up this whole backlash with the Shield of Aten to incinerate Mobius if he dim threads in, but unfortunately for him, Mobius did already, because when you're fighting the Robolisk, he comes in. So I changed it so it was a little bit different, where Hooded Cobra was monologuing about the whole thing and telling the players that as soon as he pressed this button, then the shield would activate and Mobius would be incinerated if he attempted. And right before he pressed the button, Mobius dim threaded into the bridge. So, so it was complete chaos at that point, because it was Mobius versus the Retribution League versus the players all at once. So it was a long and involved combat. And the only thing I really remember is that at some point the front windows to the bridge got blown out, And Lady Hourglass ended up mind controlling Hooded Cobra to jump out the window. So that was the end of the Hooded Cobra. The players managed to sabotage the controls enough and divert it to go out over the sea. And they basically left with Mobius trying to fix it desperately. And I don't remember how it's been so long. I don't remember how they survived this, but I'm pretty sure they all just jumped out the window and were like, we can soak it. And I think one of them had a jetpack that they had requisitioned. And then one of them just has such a high toughness and good enough reality that they could, we mathed it out and they could literally, in terminal velocity, still just take shock. So it was like, okay. But they ended up in the ocean, and that's actually kind of going ahead a little bit because they kind of, because of this, skipped the next scene. So they had this huge fight. They got the thing permanently messed up. Mobius was trying to fix it. They didn't ever attack Mobius himself because they were like, look, if we get his attention, we're just dead, so let him deal with the Retribution League. They took pot shots at the Retribution League, and eventually they just all bailed out of the window after the Hooded Cobra. And that's where this scene basically ended.
And Mark, your thoughts on scene 3, The Bridge?
This is utter chaos. I mean, the entry that just simply reads every surviving villain from the Retribution League. So, at this point, I had Grand Cicada, I had Mirage, Sir Arthur Henry Killingsworth, Lady Hourglass, Vundamind. Everybody's running around. And we get this whole speech from Hooded Cobra, and all of a sudden we're pushing buttons and things are happening. And as I remember it, there was a... I start the thing, I turn the thing off. I start the thing, I turn the thing off. And there's like, if you get it started 3 times, you can't deactivate it after the 3rd time. And so they were going around as everybody's going at it, and Brickknuckles Branko got taken out, and at some point Luke Earp got taken out, and they played captured, the Cosmic card captured on him when he got KO'd. Mirage got taken out. Ivan got her. And then Krag smashes a console at one point, and now it's everything's okay. We're stuck now. So they had a race to get to the Evening Falcon. They decided, well, if we can run fast enough and get to the Evening Falcon, we can divert this and use the engines to divert it, and then we'll let go and fly away. And so I ran it as a chase to get from the bridge back to the Evening Falcon before the Robo Gospog and all of Mobius' troops, as he stays on the bridge and furiously bangs away trying to fix it, and all of the Robo Gospog or whatever chasing him. But they absolutely they diverted it, and then they jumped on the man jet and flew off, and Lady Hourglass stowed away on the man jet, on the, not the man jet, Evening Falcon, stowed away on the Evening Falcon and brought Earp with her as a bargaining chip to say, you know, I saved your fellow, don't hurt me. And that's when the scene ended.
Yeah, I really like the picture on page 99. Kind of has a little bridge map layout that has the various like gunner councils and the just like engineering thing and stuff, so I was able to put a Retribution League member on each one, and then the players went to fight them. I believe I did something along the lines of the thing that the Hooded Cobra did to kind of hopefully disintegrate Dr. Mobius. Just made it so he couldn't dim thread in. So they closed there's a hatch in the middle that's an entry. So they closed the hatch and locked it, so to kind of keep Mobius from coming up through it. But I had like a, you know, if they don't get it done by X round, he's, you know, bursting through. But they were able to destroy the main console that had everything to sabotage it. They broke through the windows, I believe, and then went along the outside to get back to the Evening Falcon, to where then they could take off, and the man jet then crashes into the desert, because you have to have desert crashes at least a few times in the Nile Empire. But then we have scene four, Cataclysm. So, Jay, what are your thoughts? Or you said you kind of skipped this scene.
Well, more or less. But the thing was, because they left Mobius up there for a rather extended period of time, I ended up ruling that the manned jet was not totally destroyed. It hit the water, but Mobius was somehow able to regain control at the last minute. So in my campaign, the manned jet was not destroyed, but it was heavily damaged. And basically, Mobius escaped with it at the end, but it was like inoperable for what he wanted to do. But that meant it was still out there somewhere, and basically the Nile Empire would be spending time and resources to rebuild the manned jet, and in the future someone might have to deal with it again. But yeah, I could see it actually is listed here that the damage from jumping out the window is 50 plus 1 BD. So I'm pretty sure that when I mentioned that, they were like, we'll soak it. I was like, okay. But yeah, they ended up in the water because they had managed to divert it to the water, and eventually got picked up. But the thing is, I was then able to mention to them, well, you guys all survived jumping out the window, right? And they're like, yeah, so I guess Hooded Cobra might still be around. And that didn't sit well with them, but that's pretty much how that scene ended.
So, Mark, your thoughts on scene four, Cataclysm?
Well, I kind of alluded to it. It was a chase. The obstacles listed in this scene are fun when you're running the chase, and I encourage you to use many of them, if not all, as the players are rushing from the bridge back to the Evening Falcon, because it's obstacle piling. You're on the last scene of the last act of the mega adventure, and you're on the man jet and it's going down, and you're trying to get off before a nuclear blast kills you all and atomizes you. And so, yeah, there's got to be more problems. You don't have enough problems already. So let's start dropping girders in your path, and, you know, missiles exploding and Gospog showing up and hallways on fire, and you got to find a new route and all this good stuff. It's really good stuff. And we had, if I remember correctly, I ran this three times, and the man jet got destroyed each time, and it wasn't over the, I think it was over the water once, but it was over land twice. So we kind of did in Torganized play, we did a dispatch on what's the crash site like, and it has some interesting stuff in it. But this was a lot of fun. This is kind of the denouement, because you finished, you've had Mobius on the bridge and all of the Retribution League on the bridge, and you've done the thing, and now we've got that lad. We got to get off, and everybody's running. There needs to be tension, so use the obstacles. Don't make it a hand wave to get off the boat. Make it an absolutely, yeah, 50 plus 1 BD. Try to avoid the conversation about, yeah, if I roll 20 on my soak, you know, if I got an outstanding on my soak, I can soak 50 plus 1 BD, which...
I was just hoping for a mishap.
Oh, dude. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, this is a good ending to it's a fitting ending to the act, in my opinion. I like it.
Yeah, I had the race to the finishes. As I said, they broke out of the windshield and were making their way, and Mobius was chasing them. He had finally bust through the hatch, so they were trying to get to the Evening of Falcon. It was probably one of the few chases that I just let be a chase in my own home games. But it was fun. The I like when it does other things, and I think the obstacle piling, as Mark said, that it gives examples on page 101, helped keep things interesting, throwing in a few things in there. But they were able to get to the Evening Falcon and take off and leave. I think they did see a dim thread come, you know, once everything is completely destroyed, they did see a dim thread come down, and Mobius, you know, escaped. He wasn't going to die on the manned jet. But then we just have kind of the epilogue. If you were using Dr. Frest, he has like a little note that if your players have been invested, could cause a little sadness. Did either of you have the Dr. Frest's goodbye in it?
Yeah, I give it to them. I especially love his signature, like with all the
initials. All the letters.
But like I said, it was one of those situations where the players didn't really care that much about him because he was an NPC that showed up like twice before this. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was like reiterating in earlier episodes that you should make Frest a bigger deal and lead up to this a lot more, because legacy NPCs only mean things to legacy players who played classic Torg back in the day, you know, unless you make them mean something. Otherwise, the epilogue was pretty straightforward. They got picked up, but the manned jet itself was temporarily crashed in the water, was able to repel any boarding attempts, and eventually kind of floated away, and then met with other Nile forces. But the attack was stopped completely, so the Stellae network did not extend, and everyone considered it a great victory. However, the players did not acquire the Evening Falcon, because it was still on the manned jet. So Mobius also got that back too. So I mean, they still won. They still defeated the scheme, and they know about the manned jet. They can fix it until Mobius builds a second manned jet, even bigger. But that's where it ended. They were still big heroes. They got a parade and everything. And the Mystery Men had a memorial for Dr. Frest that they were all invited to as well. The thing was, seven acts is a lot. So by the time we were done with it, we were, like, done with it. okay, it's been finished. Now we can try some other Cosms again. So I really like this adventure, though. It's probably one of my favorites out of all of the... Even though I talk about changing out the acts or even reordering the acts, it is still one of my favorites out of the Mega Adventures. And my players really liked it, too. And they especially liked hating the Hooded Cobra.
Mark, your thoughts on the epilogue?
I use Frest. I did insert Frest a number of times where appropriate at, like, the beginning of acts. If there was somebody that was supposed to be giving a briefing or comments or things like that, I tried to use Frest or give a note with Frest's name on it to have somebody, you know, keep inserting his name. Especially, like, back at in Bubeki. I think it was Bubeki. Or not Bubeki. When they went into the Amazon to go get the stuff, they got the little special toys that they had. There were a number of legacy players that I ran this for, and they, the ones, as Jay said, the ones that knew who Frest was were like, oh, and everybody else was like, yeah, that's sad, but okay, what's who? You're gonna have to work hard, GMs, to make Frest somebody they care about. Throw them in there. Figure out where you can sprinkle them in so they care. And this goodbye at the end means a lot more. But, I mean, it's the Nile Empire, so is he actually dead? I don't know. You never know. In our case, the Manjet crashed or exploded spectacularly over land, and so there's fallout there that fed some other things that we did with it. Rocket Rangers were typically involved at the end to come help get people out, helicopters or whatever. It's the denouement, it's the epilogue, it's Frest's note. That's the thing that kind of ties it all together at the end, because if you had him sewn in the beginning, it's a nice neat package at the end with this note.
Yeah, I would say that's probably my out of this adventure, I don't want to say failing, but it was sort of a failing. I don't have the Delphi Council, as I said, in my home game. I have a Council of Knights. I didn't use Dr. Frest, but I used one of my original players has a character that is into gizmos and gadgets and stuff, so I used those characters. I have previous people had characters that were Amazon, so you know they had a I try to bring those personal touches, but I got into the it's 1 o'clock in the morning and we need to end, and Torg our every other week of Torg Friday nights was ending, and we were starting a new campaign and a new system the next time we met. So it was kind of like a quick wrap up, which sometimes happens too fast when you're kind of on a time limit. I wish I would have had Hawk Urbany be the Dr. Frest goodbye, because that would have then meant something, because I've noticed when characters retire and then players, for my group at least, if a player has played a character and that character comes back as an NPC later, the players feel a more personal connection than just an NPC, even if that NPC has been there from day one. If there has been any type of play from a player that kind of does it. And when we got into Torg Eternity after Torg, it was kind of like we're retiring these 25-year-old, 30-year-old Torg characters. They're going to be NPCs. Is everybody okay with your character becoming an NPC, which means that then they're under, you know, my thing. And I've brought that up in the past, where those characters being in dire situations have made it more personal. And that's something that I wish I would have had the time, or just decided, okay, staying up to 2 and then a 2-hour drive getting home at 3 is going to be worth it this time. But I was kind of, you know, looking up at the clock going, got to wrap this up, and I didn't get to it. So that's bad on me, but I do like it. And I think it would have made an impact if somebody that they, as players, knew and were connected to had been in the Dr. Frest spot. So, having gone through the whole adventure, what are your overall thoughts, Jay? You said that you and your group really, really liked it?
Yeah, I think this is out of the ones that I've actually run, because I haven't run them all. I've read them all, but I haven't run them all. So out of the ones I've run, this is probably my second favorite. I think it's got a good mix of stuff going on, the different parts of the realms. It's got different types of action and things. It's got interesting NPCs. Nile Empire is pretty easy to remember why we're here, which could be an issue with some of the other ones. And even if I might prefer the machete cut versus the standard cut, I do like all of the acts on their own. It's just sometimes, you know, 7 acts in a row can be a slog, so changing things up or maybe swapping to something else in between can also help that. But yeah, and it also gave us the legends of Rafty and Bafty and Nafty, so that's something that's become like a permanent inclusion as well. These same characters then basically went directly from this into Revenge of the Caradon. So, you can have that to look forward to as well. But yeah, I really like this. It's got a little bit of everything. And like I said, the Nile Empire is a little bit more straightforward than some of the others. So you could just kind of go for it and not worry about thinking about it too much sometimes.
Mark, your overall thoughts for the Fire of Ra, Fires of Ra?
Nile Empire is probably my favorite Cosm. I love the Nile Empire for the story possibilities that you can get into with Nile. I've run this adventure the most. I think I've run it 3 or 4 times now, and I like it a lot. It's not my favorite. It's a close second. It's a lot of fun. I would say probably the only reason this is not my favorite is because there are some points where the Eternium stuff, while a lot of fun, doesn't really have a bearing on the mission itself, other than to say, hey, we need you to do this thing because it's gonna, off camera, it's gonna do something for us, and it becomes an act you do in the book. A lot of fun, good stuff. Don't, if you don't have to cut it, don't. But Unhallowed Data, everything in Unhallowed Data relates to everything else in Unhallowed Data, and it's super dangerous. Unhallowed Data, if you don't have a good group of players who know how to play together and work together as a team, you're going to kill some people. Blood of the Blasted Lands, same thing. You're going to kill some people. Fires of Ra, you never really, in my opinion, there are very limited spots in Fires of Ra where you actually feel like, oh, this is a bad spot. It's just a lot of fun. It's a really, in my opinion, for new players, this is a great introduction to Torque. Mm-hmm. It's a great way to start because it's a very forgiving mission or adventure, whatever you want to call it, a mega adventure for players from the standpoint of if they're not real savvy on how the game flows and whatnot, they can get away with mistakes that aren't going to, you know, end the adventure in Act 3, Scene 2 or something like that. You can play all the way through it and be a little clumsy as a player and not be at a tremendous detriment unless, you know, the dice hit you. Not so much in some of the other ones. But this is just a fun romp. It really is a fun romp. It's a good story. It's a lot of fun. It's very Nile Empire. I don't think there's anything in the book that isn't Nile, that it doesn't feel like Nile Empire. Some of it more than others, but it all feels like Nile to me, and I like it. I like it a lot. It's a great adventure.
Yeah, I really like Fires of Ra. I've played through it as a player once and game mastered it once. Again, with two separate parties, one doing the first two acts, the other one's doing the rest of the adventure, except for I left Act 6 out because of time constraints. But no, both my parties had fun for the sections that they were in. And as Mark said, it really gets you into the Nile feel. You kind of really get into it, and players can, as you said, again, when players are playing in the Nile Empire, they tend to not worry as much about things going south as they would in other realities. So, yeah, I think it is pretty cool. I would like to add that Dr. Mobius is in it. So Pharaoh Mobius, the High Lord, is in it. So if you did have, say, higher level, clearance level Storm Knights, and you don't like the fact that, hey, they never get to fight High Lords, then save this for that time and ramp it up. Add, you know, instead of having Shock Troopers, use elite Shock Troopers and up some of the attributes and statistics for your Retribution League and thing like that, and have them do the Duke out. The Dr. Mobius is right there. If they're at the point where it's a you're taking out Staley and taking out High Lords, and that's what you want to do. Here's a shot, you know, one of the shots that you can use for that. Because I know some, I've read some things on various forums where people are like, oh, they never get to fight the main bad guys. Well, here's a very specific instance where your Storm Knights are face to face with the High Lord, so you can. My players turn and ran, but if your players really want to tackle a High Lord, why not? If they're ready for it. So, thank you very much for listening to our huge breakdown of Fires of Ra. We'll get back into Cyberware for the next episode. But until then, you can always write us at torgdcd@gmail.com. We will read your emails, and we will answer questions as well as comment on your comments. Go ahead and comment if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to it on YouTube. Please put your comments and hit the like button. We appreciate that. You can bite the like, as
is that the thing
they
now?
Say on the
Zaotech.
As Zaotech from the Wednesday stream was saying, the Enos influencer. but until next time, we hope you have fun in your own Cosmverse. Bye.